Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. Welcome to the one-year anniversary of Wine for Bet Street. It is hard to believe that we have been doing this wine education program for an entire year already. I think back to the first episode, and although we are always learning and always looking for ways to improve, I think we have come such a long way. The 12th letter of the alphabet is L, and we decided to explore Lambrusco. Lambrusco is actually one of the oldest wines and has genealogical heritage to wild vines. So join Debbie and me as we explore this wild child. And while you're listening, please scroll down on your app and give us a rating so that we know how we are doing and you can help others to find us. You can find out more about me and Dracena Wines on our website, www.dracenawines.com. And while you're there, since the weather is getting warm, it is a perfect time to order our Rosé of Syrah. It is our inaugural vintage, but it is getting fantastic reviews from all who are tasting it. So thanks for coming to Wine for Bet Street, and enjoy. Elmo is very happy today.
And we found out...
He talks.
Elmo is one ticklish monster.
The things you learn a year later.
I know. And actually, I think today is our 12th episode.
Yes, it is. So happy anniversary.
Woo!
Who would have thunk it?
So, I know. Yes.
So today we are on the letter L.
Lambrusco.
And I have to say, this is kind of an exciting one for me. Biologically, because this grape, which we will talk about later, is very different than all of the other grape varieties that we're used to. You know, the Vitis vinifera that we are used to, Lambrusco throws that out the window. So I will talk about that in a little bit. But are we ready for our little mascot? All right. So the letter of the day is L, and it is for Lambrusco. Now, I don't know, Debbie, I have never had a Lambrusco before.
I have.
You have. Okay.
I have. And I sent my husband in to buy one bottle of Lambrusco. I said, just under $20, and he came home with four bottles.
What's a Lambrusco party?
I'm like, what were you thinking? You know, he's like, I couldn't decide. All right.
I don't know, because I kind of, my thought process of Lambrusco is my grandparents sitting around the table during the summer in West Milford, New Jersey, with that bottle this big of Lambrusco. And them just drinking it all night. And me like, oh, can I have a sip? And so sweet. And so like, whatever.
I don't have any memories like that. But
so I, you know, during the research, I was pretty excited because they're talking about how they've reinvented Lambrusco, and it is no longer, they actually talked about the grandparents and, you know, the old Italian immigrants drinking it and how it's no longer really that, how they've increased the quality. So I'm kind of excited. to...
What I thought was the different Lambrusco varieties. It's not just one grape.
Yes. Yes.
That's what I, you know, like you say Chardonnay, and Chardonnay is Chardonnay. You're going to get, right. You know, depending on the region where it's grown, it might taste different if it's oaked or un-oaked, but it's Chardonnay.
Right. Right.
And Lambrusco is a little bit different.
Yes, which we will get into in a little bit. So, we do general, I forgot my little outline.
We gotta introduce ourselves first.
Yes, I always forget that. Go ahead, you go first.
Okay, I'm Debbie Giaquindo, the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess. I'm a certified specialist of wine and a wine location specialist in Port and Champagne. I'm the author of Tapping the Hudson Valley, Day Trips and Weekend Itineraries, Visiting the Hudson Valley and all the craft beverage producers and farmers markets and sites along the way. I'm co-owner now of a restaurant that's been, or I'm partner, in operation since March 30th in Stone Harbor, New Jersey, Kitchen 330. I'm partner in Happy Bitch Wines. And if anybody ever comes to me with another project, I've got to say no.
Well, Elmo thinks it's funny too. Well, I'm Lori of Dracena Wines. My husband Michael and I are the co-owners of the award-winning Cabernet Franc producers in Paso Robles, California. We also produce a rosé of Syrah, and we've just started our wine club, which is taking off, and I'm so excited that, you know, people are and honored that people are signing up for our wine club. The Chalk Club, which is kind of in a roundabout way named after our other Weimar Honor, Vegas. Of course, Betting Chalk is betting all the winners, and, you know, our Weimar Honor is now Vegas, named after Las Vegas. Basically, Cabernet Franc, founders of Cab Franc Day, Rosé of Syrah, I don't know, maybe something coming up in the near future. Maybe.
I had the Rosé last night. It was really good.
What?
I had your Rosé last night. It was really good. I haven't posted pictures yet.
You did? I see. I didn't even know that. I was beyond thrilled. I actually went to bed last night and I woke up to my phone buzzing at like 11:30 last night. And I just happened to roll over and look at it. And somebody had posted a picture of our rosé. If you are in the wine club, when we send you your shipment, we send you a recipe recommendation. And Richard Burrito actually did that actual recipe, which was salmon on planks. And
nice.
So he posted a picture of it and said we nailed the pairing perfectly. And I was like so thrilled, especially considering I don't eat salmon. So I was, you know, I was like, yeah, this will go. Gave him the recipe.
Kind of like pulled pork with South Carolina type of pulled pork.
Oh.
Vinegary side, and it worked well.
Oh, well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Never, you know what? It's like, I mean, I don't have children, but I kind of think that it's kind of like, you know, somebody giving your child a compliment. This is, you know, these wines are our babies. And when people post that they enjoyed our wines or they put their pairings or whatever, it never gets old hearing that people enjoy our wines. So
yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So let's get into Lambrusco.
Lambrusco.
So you are up first with general characteristics, or do we want to taste this? I'm kind of a little nervous.
Okay, so we can taste first if you want. I haven't poured mine yet.
It's so dark.
Oh, mine isn't.
Yours. Oh my God! Look at the difference in color.
But wait till you see my characteristics. You'll see why.
Okay.
But yeah. Usually the Lambruscos, I have to figure out the lighting in my room here, my office, so I have a lantern here.
So. You're going camping.
Yes, I have to figure out how to get more light in here. If anybody listening has any suggestions, I'm open to them because it's in a little alcove.
Well, that's different.
Yes. Mine is a little different. It's different. I've had the one that that Paul brought.
Right.
Was dark like that. One of the ones was dark that we drank. Very effervescent, this one.
When I popped it, it had a lot of effervescence. Like the cork, and I had it in the refrigerator since yesterday. So it was cold because, you know, when you pop a cork, it needs to be cold if you don't want it to go flying 50 feet into the air. So it definitely was cold enough, but there was a lot of pressure underneath it. So I was expecting quite a bit of effervescence, but I mean, this is a horrible glass. I probably should have poured it into a flute.
Yeah, but you know what? Even in my glass, you can see the bubbles a little bit.
Yeah, not. I'm not.
But it's not like champagne.
No, it's not. This is a grapefruit roll up.
Yep. Mine's not as though. This is actually not bad. I mean,
it's not. It's not so sweet.
But hey, Michael, what is the typical alcohol percent? That's a good question. What is my alcohol percentage?
I ripped the living daylights out of my label.
I have it in my notes for the.
Oh, so do I. I'm so stupid sometimes.
I'm looking at the bottom, but I think I have it.
This is only 9% alcohol, Michael. Damn, I can like have this whole bottle, but I don't.
Boy, I don't have the alcohol.
Yeah, mine is only 9%. I do believe Lambruscos are on the lower side. I think if you have a
this is an 11.5.
I was gonna say 9 to 12. I was gonna say higher than 12 would be rare. So yeah, mine is 9. That's not even alcohol to my liver.
And mine's 11.5%. So 9 to 11%.
Yeah. So, all right. So, Debbie, what's our general characteristics of Lambrusco?
So, Lambrusco is a family of grapes, and each individual grape has typical characteristics, and as do their respective resulting wines. Lambrusco is a red sparkling wine, and it's typically fruity with good acidity, sometimes savory and tannic, but generally relatively dry. So I guess that's where the fruity comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Lambrusco was made using the traditional method as champagne is, where fermentation happens in the bottle. And when we get to my wine, I have a Riddling. I show them Riddling.
Ooh.
So
like you said, champagne, they do it in bottle. Because
right.
My impression was that most Lambruscos were done like Prosecco.
Oh, tank.
Yeah. Tank. Yeah. So
wow.
You have a special one there.
Yeah, I guess I'm special today. So anyway, so these are the different, the happy families of grapes. There's Lambrusco di Sobera, Lambrusco Mistri, Lambrusco Gresperoa, which is also, and I can't pronounce these things, Lambrusco di Castellitro, there's Lambrusco Salamino, and Lambrusco Marni. These are the aroma and flavors of Lambrusco Sobera, and actually that's what my Lambrusco happens to be.
Okay.
Mine
is Di Castelvetero.
Okay, cool. So, Lambrusco di Sorbara. It grows in sparse conical clusters bearing fruit, an abundance of which varies year to year due to flowering abnormalities, which can give rise to considerable loss of fruit. So it's, they don't know what causes the issue, and they think it's the sterility of the pollen. Mm. The traditional area of cultivation lies between Sechia and Pinero rivers, formed in conjunction floodplains of the two rivers where the soils are sandy and loose and rich potassium. When the vine's grown on soils with higher clay content, the wine takes on a deeper color than usual and loses much of its scent. That's interesting. So the color is the lightest of the Lambrusco grapes. It may look like a rosé, but it's indeed a red wine, kind of like mine. The grape has skins with a little pigment. The wines made with this grape tend to be fragrant, floral, fresh and fruity, bright acidity, and dry. Strawberry, raspberry aromas, hints of violet, red berry. So those are the aromas and flavors of that particular one. Then we get on to Lambrusco Grasparosa and Lambrusco di Castelvetro. Is this the one that you have?
Yeah, that's what I have. I have Lambrusco di Castelvetro.
Okay, so the vines are distinguished by a special characteristic. In the fall, the leaves turn, not just the leaves turn red, but the stalks and the pedicels turn red.
Right.
The grapes, they range from plummy dark blue to blackish. They have a thick skin, contain medium juice, sweetish, due to its lack of vigor, the Lambrusco Grasparosa vine is best cultivated in smaller vineyards. It's a dark wine, deep ruby in color, red and black fruit, tannins. It can be dry, savory, bright acidity, fuller body wine due to the clay soil, and it can leave a bitter taste in your mouth. And scent of peach and almonds. Do you get any of that in yours?
I am cherry and almond.
You're cherry and almond?
Cherry and almond. And I kind of, you know what, I wouldn't have said violet, except I saw violet, so you know how that puts it in your brain.
Yeah.
But this is like opening a bag of almonds.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, there's cherry, there's cherry, but the flavor is grape fruit roll.
So Lambrusco Salamino.
Yep.
That one's up next. Here the soils are accumulations of sediment left behind by the flooding of various rivers and streams that cross the Molise Plains from north. Sand and clays are present throughout the area, so that's what influences the grape. The wines here tend to be ruby-colored, purple edge, purple hue, fruity and grapey, bright acidity, and it has a dry finish. And it's grown around Modena and Reggio Emilia. Lambrusco Mastery.
Ooh, double bubble, my favorite gum on the face of the earth.
Yes, this actually was found to be a parent offspring relationship with Cortana. That's another grape I know absolutely nothing about. Hmm. Maybe we'll try that for F. It's hardier. Its wine is dark. Dark wine with intense purple hues, purple tones with a deep ruby hue, fruity flesh, bubblegum characteristics on the aroma, complex flavors of dark plums, ripe blackberry, milk chocolate, and violet. It's soft and creamy with a fresh grapiness quality.
I don't know. That kind of sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I seriously love Double Bubble. Like, seriously, you want to be my friend, bring me Double Bubble. but I don't know if I want that in a wine. But yeah. The
maybe chocolate covered cherries with the mixture of the two.
Yeah. But a violet seems to be the main, you know, throughout the whole.
Throughout all of them, yeah. Violet is.
Yeah. And an iris.
Yeah, violet gets around. So Lambrusco, we're on Lambrusco Marni, right? Yeah, Lambrusco Marni. I need a pronunciation class. these wines are not as fruity, but tannic and acidic. Floral, you'll get violets, iris, peonies, blackcurrant, and red cherry. When it's well made, it's not too tannic, and it's bright with a juicy personality. So
that sounds more like something I could deal with.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. You know, it would have been interesting to try all these different grapes side by side.
You mean if we researched prior to buying the bottle?
Yeah, and we were together for a tasting.
Yeah.
All of the different varietals. I mean,
right.
The main thing that they have is that they are all have violets.
Yes.
And they're all red and black fruit.
Yeah, they all are either red cherry or black currant or both, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, red cherry. This one's got bloom. I don't know about the bubblegum thing. You know, there's, you know, red and black fruit.
See, they all have the black currant and the red cherries, too. The Bing. Yeah. They look like Bing cherries. So, yeah. So, it is my turn for history. And, you know, as I said at the beginning, you know, what comes to mind when you think of Lambrusco, you know, on my mom's side anyway, because, you know, dad is Irish, Scottish, German, you know, beer. You know, but on my mom's side is Italian. So there was Lambrusco on the table, and, even dad liked Lambrusco. You know, I was a little kid just taking a sip there. But the first thing that entered my thoughts was sitting around my table during the summer with my great grandmother and grandparents drinking out of this massive jug. You know, and it was a sparkling wine, but it was bad. And I think the biggest thing that I remember is Ria Nidi on ice. Isn't it nice?
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Right. I think that was the downfall of Lambrusco right there. But, you know, if that's what their marketing scheme was, it kind of tells you what the quality of the wine was back then. Right. You know, throw the ice on. But what's kind of cool, and, you know, biologically, Lambrusco is amazing. So it's actually one of the oldest wines and has a genealogical heritage of wild vines. So it is the wild one of grape varieties. The ancient Romans used to call it Labrusca from the Latin labrum, which actually means edge or border. And that's a perfect name for it because it used to grow, or it still actually grows wildly along the edge of vines. The edges of fields. So these are actually the non-domesticated grapevines. So our Chardonnays, our Merlots, our Cab Francs, they've all been domesticated. So these are, you know, the wild ones out there. So it's kind of like, you know, we have the domesticated dogs, you know, they live in our houses, they're tame. And then you've got, just went out of my head. What's they're called in Australia? The,
Outback?
No, the dogs, there's dogs out running wild in Australia. You know, I'm going to say the wrong word, and it's probably going to mean something else, so I don't want to say it. But, you know, there's wild dogs. There's wild cats versus domesticated cats. Lambrusco is the non-domesticated, the wild grapes. Lambrusco is different than any other of the grapevines we're familiar with because it is a wild vine. It actually can pollinate with, like, anything that's out there. So our grapes that we're used to, the Chardonnays and all of those, you know, they're self-pollinating and they kind of stay within, you know, their own species. And we have our clones, where Lambrusco is like, I'm going to send my pollen out there. My stigma is going to be ready to accept any pollen. So they actually can pollinate with other grape varieties, dandelions, wildflowers, like they'll pollinate with anything. So we get a lot of different Lambrusco varieties. So you were talking about some of the different varieties, and that's all because they've pollinated with something other than their own grape clusters. So next up is back in the time, the Romans actually fermented the Lambrusco in an amphora. And this is a pretty decorated amphora that's found in the National Museum of Scotland. And what they did was they would fill this with the wine and they closed it and placed the amphora underground to keep it well chilled. But if they wanted it to be sparkling, they actually would put it in a little warmer place, and that would allow for the fizziness. Okay, so Modena, Parma, and Reggio Emilia are the best known regions for Lambrusco. Archaeologists have found seeds that offer proof that the Lambrusco grapevine thrived in the Modena, and that the people who lived there paid a great deal of attention to it. They really loved this vine. They, you know, it wasn't, even though it was wild, they kind of tended to it. They paid attention to it. They picked it. They watched what was going on. There are, as you said, there are several types of Lambrusco, de Modena, depending on the type of grape and the region where it is grown. It is most widely produced in the hills surrounding Modena, but also grows in nearby Reggio Emilia and even in Parma and Lombardy. Now, the downfall of Lambrusco was by far the 1970s, where although there were dry versions of Lambrusco, it is typically a dry wine. During the 1970s, the Americans were drinking the cheap sweet wines, and what happened was the Italians were like, yeah, these people in the 70s, man, they're going to drink all this sweet stuff. Yeah, we're going to pump them with all this basic garbage, and they're going to soak it up. And that's exactly what happened. So the Italians flooded the market with the sweet stuff because the people were pretty much, I'm going to go, I'm stuck. Not that this was historically found in any documentation, but it was the 70s, you know, they didn't know what they were drinking. So anything sweet, you know, while they were at, all I keep thinking is Goldfinger from Austin Powers and Studio 54, you know. Yeah. So the Italians flooded the market with the sweet stuff. And as the decade came to a close, people started to go, their palates started to change, and they started to realize there were differences in wine. And unfortunately for Lambrusco, it got caught up in the past. So people saw Lambrusco as fruity and sweet, and they began to turn their noses up to it. So this is a little similar to some of the slides that you presented. Lambrusco is actually the name of the grape, and it is the name of the region in which it is grown. With all the different types of Lambrusco, we have Grasperosa, Salamino, and Sorbara, those being the most common ones. Lambrusco Grasperosa de Castelvetro, which is what I have, tend to be the most tannic and full-bodied, while Lambrusco di Sorbara will be the most fragrant. So there are actually have been identified over 60 varieties of Lambrusco throughout Italy.
That's a lot of Lambrusco.
And as I had said earlier, I don't know if we were on air or off air at that point, but most Lambrusco is actually made in steel tanks, but there are a few that are still made in the traditional champagne method, which is what you have, with a second fermentation in bottle. So Italians are now fighting hard to show that they are more than just the cheap, sweet red wine of the 70s. They are lobbying to have Lambrusco only on wine labels, Italian wine labels, kind of similar to how champagne has to be produced in Champagne. So they're trying to get it to be very regimented, so you know what you're getting. Depending on where you look, there is a mention of anywhere between 4 and 12 Lambrusco denominations, de originale, so DOCs. And that, I think, is their first thing they have to do. So depending on where you are looking, some resources say there are only 4 DOCs that are true Lambrusco, and others say there are anywhere up to 12. So I've seen 4, 8, and 12. Those are the main numbers. So right off the bat, that's a marketing issue right there. If they're going to try to promote Lambrusco and to have it as, you know, like a champagne concept, they need to say, no, these are the DOCs, this is it. And it, no matter where you look, it needs to be the same thing. So
yeah,
it was very difficult to understand what was a Lambrusco DOC, what wasn't. All right, so this is Lambrusco Grasperosa de Castelvino, Castelvero, the smallest wine-producing region located south of the town of Modena. The region is home to Grasperosa, of which the DOC requires 85% of the wine to be composed of the actual Lambrusco. The wine of this region is typically dry and full-bodied with a deep purplish-red color. Well, I sure as heck will say this is a deep purplish red coloring, and it is definitely a full-bodied wine. Grasperosa produces the most tannic Lambrusco. Mantovano is the only Lambrusco region outside of Emilia-Romagna in the Lombardy region. So this style is typically dry, but there are some semi-dry styles available from this region. Next up is the Reggiano. This is the largest producing region of Lambrusco and the source of the most of the exported DOC-designated wines. The 4 Lambrusco grapes that can be used are Maestri, Marrone, Montericcio, and Salamino. And up to 15% of added Ancelotti grapes are permitted into this DOC. I didn't look up what Ancelotti is, but there's another A for us if we can get
there. You go.
If we can get there for season 2. The sweet versions of the wine are typically in the light-bodied Frizzante style, while the drier wines are more full-bodied and significantly darker in color. Next, the Salamino de Santa Croce, which is actually located 7 miles west of the village of Sorbana. The wines of this region must be composed of at least 90% of Loco Salamino Lambrusco. So the wines are typically light in color and body with a Frizzante style, being both made in the semi-sweet and dry styles. The variety gets its name from the resemblance of the grape clusters, which look like sausage or salami.
I'm not going there.
Yeah. And we have where yours is from, De Sorbara. Okay. Lambrusco di Sabara is located north of Modena, near the village of Sabara. Sabara is generally regarded as the highest quality variety producing the most fragrant wines. It has some similarities to Lambrusco Salamino, but produces a darker and more full-bodied wines. The color can range from a deep ruby to a purplish hue, which I'm going to say you're more along the ruby side, right? Yeah. In this wine region, only Sabara or Salamino are permitted to be in the bottle if it is DOC designated, and at least 60% need to be Sabara. The Salamino and Sabara varieties tend to produce the most acidic wines. So that's got my, you know, I'm such the acid head.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why Sabara tends to produce the highest quality Lambrusco is the tendency of the vine to drop its flowers, which reduces the fruit yields and thereby concentrates the flavors. So there is my history.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in Lambrusco.
The wild child.
Talk
about our wines?
We shall talk about our wines. Although I kind of already have, but what you got?
Mine is 70. I have a Pira Peltranieri.
Okay.
Peltranieri is the wine winery.
Oh, it's an interesting label.
Yeah, there's got to be something significant about the label. I couldn't find my answer, though, and it was a little late in the day for me to email them. But this is 70% Lambrusco Sabara and 30% Lambrusco
Salamino. Right, because as we just learned, it has to only contain those two.
Yep, and mine actually does.
Mm.
This dry, I will say, and the winery itself is in its fourth generation.
Oh.
And I'm going to read to you, if I can find it. So right now it's under the fourth generation, Alberto Peltranieri. And I'm going to just read a little clip.
Okay.
So he says, when he finished his studies, my father asked me what I wanted to do in life. My answer was that I wanted to keep alive the tradition of work that grandfather Achilles had begun in 1926 and that he and my mother had been running for 40 years. In 1998, with my wife Barbara, I started directing the winery, gambling on the production of the first monovarietal Sabara. Since then, I have managed and produced 17 hectares of vineyards in the historic area of the Cristo di Sabara, thinnest extension of land between Secchia and Pinaro, the two rivers that embrace the province of Modena.
My guy here is Donnelly, and it is sweating up a storm, and I destroyed the label. So it is Donnelly, and as I said, it is from Grasperosa di Castelvetro. And it is based in the northern Italian region of Emilia-Romagna. Donnelly has been producing wine since actually 1915. So in 1915, when Adolfo Donnelly transitioned from bottling wine in his home cellar to launching the full-scale winery, from the start, Donnelly dedicated himself to the production of Lambrusco. I guess if you're going to live there, that's what you're going to make. I mean, that's, the Giacobazzi family took control of the winery in the mid-90s and has been carrying on the respected traditions of the Donnellis. Antonio Giacobazzi is now president of Donnelly and has joined the businesses with three of his children, Alberto, Giovanni, and Angela. Their vineyards span 110 acres, which is quite a bit, and Donnelly's estate-owned vineyards are planted in various strains of the native Lambrusco varietal, as well as other indigenous grapes. So what I'm kind of getting is a lot of red berries. I get that almond, big time almond.
I get the almond in mine too.
Yeah.
They
say there's spicy notes. I am not getting any spice, but that's what they're saying. It's even though the region is known to be highly tannic, this is not a very tannic wine. I wouldn't say it's tannic. But it does have a decent amount of acidity. The grapes for this wine were grown on a calcareous and clay soil, and they were hand harvested and then vinified in stainless steel tanks with maceration at a controlled temperature. The wine fine producing using the Charmat or the tank method for the second fermentation. 90% Lambrusco Grasperosa, 10% Malbo Gentile. No clue. And that is all from the city of Modena. Those are from the city of Modena. And the average the average vine age is 20 years. As I said earlier, it's 9% alcohol. It's got 7.5% acidity, or 7.5 grams per liter of acidity, and 35 grams per liter of residual. So,
wow.
Yeah, wow. It doesn't really taste that sweet at all. I mean, I wouldn't.
Acid balance.
Yeah.
Acidity.
Yeah. It's just not my cup of tea, you know. And it does retail for, everything is always on sale where I buy the wine. So it's typically $12, but I got it for $9.99.
Yeah, mine was $10.
Right. So, all right, we are going to go to food pairings. Since Lambrusco hails from the Emilia-Romagna region of Italy, you know, you got to go like with like. So you're going to be looking at a lot of Italian-type foods. First up is pork. So smoked pork shank with Lambrusco sauce and roast bologna. Potatoes. Next is a charcuterie. Seriously, any wine can go with that, you know. But they recommend the whole muscle meats. So, you know, those with that nice little blah in there. So prosciutto, dry cured, aged pig's leg, bresaola, which is beef prosciutto, capicola, which is dry cured single muscle from the top of the shoulder, and smoked ham, which is Serrano ham. So I don't consider a charcuterie unless there's cheese, and there's no cheese. I guess, is that cheese there?
It's blue cheese.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I don't do blue, so there we go. All right. Next is porchetta, which is rolled pork with herbs. So Mike makes this.
Do you eat it?
No. Mike makes it when my parents are around because they like it. They like it a lot, so I guess it's good. I don't know. But no, I do not. Pizza, baby. That's mine, by the way. That is my pizza. So if you can see that way down there, recipe found on winepairingwithdrissinawines.wordpress.com. That is Mike's favorite dough recipe right there. It's a little deep dish. Good stuff. All right, next up is barbecued chicken. Yep. And there's my jam, Parmigiano Reggiano and Grana Padano. Grana Padano is I love that cheese. That is so good.
I like
good.
That. I buy that at Murray's in Grand Central.
Oh, so good. So yeah. good. And then if you're doing on the sweeter side of the Lambrusco, the peaches, fresh fruit, you know, peaches and nectarines, because you see that, you know, what you were talking about, you had a lot of the regions of Lambrusco had peach aromas and flavors in them. So taking that fresh peach and biting into it and then having a Lambrusco with it is just...
Would be really good.
Oh yeah. Mike makes these. Oh my god. He takes the peach, he cuts it in half, and then he, you know, where the pit goes, he takes macaroons and he crumbles up the macaroons and does something with it and then stuffs the peach with the macaroon. And then he puts some sort of sauce over it and then he bakes it, and that would be incredible.
Wow.
He's going to have to make that for me when I see him on Friday. Mike, make me peaches.
That's right, it's Memorial Day weekend.
Yay! And then next weekend I get to see you.
I know.
All right. So that is the food pairings. We're back
to... Happy family.
Woo!
It's actually the most misunderstood wine. Because it's just not one great variety or one wine. So it's extremely... The wild child is misunderstood. But isn't that normal?
That is.
Right? That is normal. So, the home is Amelia Rogamano. I have such a hard time with this foreign stuff. Rogamano. Region of Italy, which is home to, you know, Parmesan Reggiano cheese, prosciutto di Parma, ham, balsamic vinegars of yep. Modena. So it's also home to Ferrari, Lamborghini, Maserati, and Ducati.
There you go. There's my Ducati, baby.
Pavarotti's favorite wine is Lambrusco di whatever I'm drinking.
Oh.
Sorbara, I believe.
Oh. Yep.
Bet you didn't know that.
I did not.
50% of Lambrusco is exported to the United States, Germany, France, Spain, and Brazil.
All right. That is Lambrusco. I'm not going to lie. This is still my first glass.
Well, this is still my first glass too. So, I'm up front. It's not my favorite. It's not my favorite wine. I think it has its place.
It was interesting to learn about it. It's just.
I learned something new. I didn't realize it was a family of grapes.
Right. I thought it was very cool biologically, how it is not a self-pollinator. It pollinates with everything out there.
So the wild child also has sex with everything out there. Boy, there's just nothing good about this wild child.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is it's an interesting grape variety. And it has its place, and as I definitely promote 100% of the time, do not let other people tell you what you like and what you don't like.
I do the same thing. If you like it, you like it, drink it, and enjoy it.
And from what I've seen, the price point is fantastic. I mean, mm-hmm. $10 for the bottle, it is what it is. But it is not my cup of tea. But do you know what is my cup of tea, Debbie?
Cab Franc.
Well, yes, Cab Franc. Oh, but if I'm not drinking Cab Franc, I like ordering wine from Wink.com. Because what is incredible about Wink.com is that you do a little profile taste. You know, they ask you these little cute little questions, and they give you a palate profile. And from that palate profile, they start suggesting wines for you. And you can pick 4 bottles and put them in your shopping cart. They ship them to you. And if you use our link, which is trywink, trywinc.com/winefabet, you're going to get $22 off of your first order, which pretty much brings you four bottles of wine for like $25. The average price, because it's like 14 or 13 bucks a bottle there. So for a little bit more than this Lambrusco, there is quite a bit out there. And so that is my cup of tea. trywink.com/winefabet.
I think that is, it's cool on how they match up your profile with like just different things, the different things in life, like if you like tea or coffee.
Right.
Like that, all that influences the types of wines that you like.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And if they suggest a wine that you're like, yeah, no, not my, don't want that, no problem. You just don't put it in your shopping cart.
Yeah. It doesn't get any better than that.
Right.
And let FedEx or UPS bring it to your doorstep.
Yeah. Very nicely. In like a day. Like it comes in a day. It's
really
incredible. Yeah.
Wow. So next month, should we talk about next month?
Yes.
Next month, we visit Spain.
Not going to lie, kind of happy to be out of Italy. Not that I shouldn't say that, because I would love to go back to Italy, but we've been doing quite a bit of Italy.
Yeah. So I'm kind of looking forward to it, because the Mencia grape, I don't know anything about it.
No, me neither.
And I'm really looking forward to learning about it and tasting the wine.
Yeah. It's not going to be a wild child, though. It's not going to be a wild child.
It's not as wild as Lambrusco.
Yeah.
I don't think you can get any wilder than that.
No. We need to do the theme wild thing. I think I love you.
You don't want me singing.
So yes. So next week, next month, do you have the date, Debbie? Because I always count on you for that.
Next month, it is June 18th. Monday, June 18th. 8 p.m. Eastern, same bat channel. Lori and I will be here. Will you still be here?
I will be back here, yes.
Okay.
Yes. I will be back from California on the 30th, and then I head back to California on the 27th.
Okay.
So that actually reminds me, I need to pack my N and O. Because that will be California. I need to pack them.
Oh, yeah. You should have just waited to purchase them out there.
Well, the N is a wink wine. So it got sent to me here. But the O, and we're going to have a special guest, right?
Right. That's what you said.
Yes, we are going to have a special guest. I'm keeping him a secret, though. So we will have 3 people for O.
That'll be fun.
Yes. So
a lot of fun.
Thank you, everybody, for joining.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Oh, he left. He just left.
Yeah.
Thank
you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for joining in. And as Debbie and I said, it's June 18th is the next month. And the link is in the chat. And we hope to see you there. And until then.
And you know what? If you try a Lambrusco,
Let
us know what you think of it.
Yeah, because you know
it's not my cup of tea. It's not my favorite. But let us know what you think.
But that's our palate. You may think this is all that, and more power to you. So, Slancha.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, Facebook, Snapchat, Google, and Periscope as @DracenaWines. I am also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd, or email us at dracinawines.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find us more easily. We are found on all of your favorite aggregators. To subscribe easily to iTunes, go to bit.ly/DracinaPodcast. That's bit.ly/DracinaPodcast. And that's a capital D for Dracina and capital P for podcast. Please check out our award-winning wines and find out about our wine club at DracinaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte.